Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So Jerry Clark is talking here about what sci-fi was. And of course, the first science fiction magazine was Amazing Stories. Ray Palmer became the editor, what, in the late 30s or early 40s? And continued until he left and started Fate magazine with Kurt Fuller. But you were talking here about the mindset of this kind of sci-fi story and how it influenced our culture.
Sci-fi is something different from SF, as it was called in those days. In our generation, it was SF. SF was pulp stuff, pulp stories. And there were people who could write, who wrote for the pulp magazines, like, for example, Ray Bradbury started out in the pulps. And so everything there wasn't bad, but most stuff was bad. So it has a terrible reputation. But people who loved the stuff were very defensive about it. And they already knew that they were on the fringes. They resented that. But when Flying Saucers came along, this was even worse, because people who read science fiction were likely to be associated with another fringe crowd, people who saw flying saucers or believed in them. And so science fiction fans would run into people who would say, oh, you're into that little green man stuff. And so it was part of their campaign for respectability that they became so ferociously, almost irrationally, anti-anomaly, anti-UFO. They did not want to be associated with that because they were striving for respectability by the faithful. And they were on the literary fringes. They were really on the fringes of culture. A lot of people who read science fiction were kind of people just sort of outside the mainstream of society. But they loved science fiction. They loved SF. They wanted it to be respectable. They wanted to be part of this culture. And so when Flying Saucers came along, nobody wanted to touch flying saucers in the SF community because they were even more unrespectable than stories about spaceships and bug-eyed monsters, which didn't even pretend to be serious. And so these people were addressed by their friends and neighbors, I'm sure, as, oh, you're into that little green man stuff, there being no discrimination between science fiction and people's actual reports of spaceship-like phenomena. And so to maintain their respectability, they had to disavow what they saw as the competition, which was strange stories, strange sightings that claimed to be true. And they wanted no part of that, because if they did, they were already suspect. And if they went over to embrace UFOs, they'd be thought of as completely crazy. And that attitude, although it's antiquated now because science fiction is at the center of popular culture, hangs on. And they don't even know why. It's just a tradition within this literary genre and its adherence.
I had a guy come up to my table. I thought I'd set up a little table at one of the sci-fi conferences here in Calgary. And I had a guy come up, and he was dressed in all Star Trek garb as a Vulcan. Right. And put on this air of logic and essentially dressed me down right at the table. And I was like, why are you doing this to me? You know, so now I guess I kind of get it. So this is completely separate then from the Robertson panel and their whole recommendation to ridicule UFO believers and such.
No, it's just an old social phenomenon of those who are in and those who are out. And the competition for respectability, that's all it is.
You know what? I was surprised. I had of course, I used to organize conferences in various parts of the country, mainly out west. And I think it was in Colorado Springs. I'm not 100% sure of the town. But I had people like Jesse Marcel Jr. on the program and different local people who were speaking on everything from UFOs, contacteeism, and so forth. I thought that I would devote one afternoon to the X-Files, which was very big at the time. And I had there was a group in town that had an organization that was pretty much all just X-Files. So they became a ticket ticket seller for us. And I told them that they could take over the afternoon show, put together a panel, do whatever that they wanted to do with it. I thought it would be a good crossover, because certainly X-Files people would be interested in UFOs, and UFO people must be watching X-Files. Well, do you know that when they had that afternoon panel, there were none of our UFO people there? There were maybe 40 people that were there to talk about the X-Files, and not more than two or three people from the rest of the group, which would have been maybe 300 in number or something. It was just where there was no crossover. Neither one of them were interested in the other subject. So even the X-Files didn't really make an impression on the UFO people. Sad to say. And kind of surprising. Star Trek is kind of the same way. Whenever I have had a program on Exploring the Bizarre, which is my podcast, if I've had somebody on talking about Star Trek, the ratings and the number of views go down in half.
Wow. I mean, I'm a Star Trek fan, a sci-fi fan, loved the X-Files. You know, all the little Easter eggs in there that alluded to real-life sightings and stuff like that just made it more interesting for me. I guess I must be an anomaly in the field. Of course, then again, I'm one of those people who was idealistic enough to try to unite the whole field back in the early 90s with, you know, a group of my own. And well, we all know how that went.
By the way, just to add this to the discussion, In Search Of, which covered unexplained mysteries, that TV show, the host was Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock.
Correct.
So in that particular case, there was a way that these interests coalesced.
Well, we don't know we don't know if science fiction people were watching the In Search Of necessarily. I know what you're saying. And of course, there were sightings. That was a very good program that Henry Winkler was the producer of. I don't know if most people realize that. But I did have. I remember I was going to tell a little apro story, Gene, because you said how contentious Carl Lorenzen could be. Well, this was back, and again, I don't remember the year. It would have been the early 70s. And I was working for Jim Mosley, who had a weekly UFO group there in New York. I had meetings at one of the Midtown hotels around Times Square. You could rent a room that would hold, like, you know, 70 or 80 people, folding chairs only, for about $25. Can you imagine what that would cost today? You call up a hotel and they want $2,000 for a room to have a psychic fair or something. Okay, so I would help Jim set up the chairs, and I would talk to some of the people who were attending maybe for the first time, and chatting them up, you know, pretty much. Okay, so there was a lady who approached me, and apparently who had approached Jim as well, and wanted to put together a lecture because she said she had some very interesting films and slides that she wanted to show to the audience. She was a paranormal contactee. I guess I can reveal her name. I was always very impressed by her, Stella Lansing. Dr. Bethold Eric Schwartz did several chapters on her in one of his books, I think, UFO Dynamics. She would go out at night. I would call her like a UFO repeater. She would go out at night with her still camera or 8mm camera, point it to the sky, roll off some film, come back in, and there'd be all these weird images on there, like clock faces, faces of people that weren't there in the sky, certainly. Okay, so it was interesting, but it didn't appeal to Jim too much. So I had to kind of convince him, well, let the lady speak, because let's see what she has to say. All right, so she gave her program, and I was impressed by it. I don't remember what Jim's feeling was, but it went over pretty good.
We have Jerry Tim, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
The following is a paid announcement. The advertiser was paid a marketing fee for a digital campaign. Please make sure to review our disclaimer on our report page.
The new year is here, and the time is now to capitalize on the health stocks boom in the U.S. markets. With the pandemic affecting virtually every aspect of American life, people are ready to get past the crisis and get on with living. We've identified a company that could scale up widespread rapid testing and get our economy back on track sooner rather than later. And we want to introduce you to this groundbreaking company with your free subscription to Avid Stock News Trends. Text the word test to 48542 to get info on this undervalued rapid testing technology that can deliver results in as little as 15 minutes. Demand for testing devices could outstrip supply for the foreseeable future. Text the word test to 48542 to get your free subscription to Avid Stock News Trends. Get this red hot intelligence delivered directly to your mobile device so you can make decisions as market conditions change. Avid Stock News Trends. Text the word test to 48542. Text test to 48542.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Tim Beckley, you were talking about that particular meeting. Would you please kind of wrap it up and we've gone on to other stuff?
Okay, certainly. So APRO had a rather big meeting in Baltimore. Yeah, it was in a building that had a restaurant up on top that was shaped like a flying saucer, and it it rotated so that you could see the city. Okay, so they had a meeting there, and Jim was there, and Gray Barker was there, and myself, and they were having a secret meeting that was closed to everybody but the hierarchy of APRO. Well, Jim and Gray decided that they wanted to force their way into the meeting to see what was going on. Well, to my way of thinking, it was rather funny because here they thought they were going to be given some new information, vital information that Jim and Coral had put together. It was a lecture by Stella Lansing. So she ended up moving from Saucer News, where she gave her first appearance, to the APRO meeting where Jim and Gray and myself got kicked out. And it was pretty much the same talk. I don't know. You know, like they weren't missing anything because it had already been presented. Coral, I believe, escorted them out, especially Jim, personally.
I am not at all surprised with that particular treatment. I was under the impression, though, this was intended to be a meeting just of APRO members and outsiders were not involved, or what?
Well, the convention was open to the public, but this particular meeting was a closed session just for the APRO staff or board members, or maybe just members in general. It wasn't open to the public, except that Jim and Gray and myself, I guess I just decided to tag along, wanted to hear what was being said because they thought it was something of great relevance or importance that they were not supposed to be permitted to hear.
I would agree with APRO that if they're having a meeting just for members only, they have the right to say people who are not members or participants can't be there.
I wouldn't disagree with that necessarily either. I mean, even Jim had meetings. We had meetings on the group, you know, the scientific ufologists. Of course, there were no scientists on the group that I can recall. But certainly we did have closed meetings where Jack Robinson took the minutes and read the proceedings from the following year's convention, which kind of dragged on. And the public was not invited, except for the one time at the 1967 convention at the Hotel Commodore. There was a secret meeting where John Keel was giving his first presentation, and it was so secret that it was broadcast on radio station WBAI.
Yeah, and, of course, you know, it had a very small audience, didn't it? But I think this is really interesting. It's one of the most wonderful things for me about the Paracast is being able to hear the stories from the veterans like yourselves, Gene, of course, included, that it takes me back to before my time, and it's like sort of being and witnessing part of the golden age of ufology, which, you know, of course, Jerry, you know what that was like. It seems like those were just better days when before it all kind of devolved into what it's become today.
Well, you're probably talking to the wrong person about that because I pride myself on having no nostalgic genes. You know, it was what it was. It was fun sometimes. And, you know, I associated with, you know, growing up, going through your teens and your adolescence and trying to find your way in the adult world. There's a lot of pain associated with that. And so when I think back on those days, I think of the big picture, which wasn't just talking with Tim Beckley and other people about UFOs. It was just part of a whole package of just growing up and trying to figure out how to live in the world, you know. And to me, it was just strange because I read Ruppelt and Fort at an early impressionable age. And the next thing I know, I'm way older. And I'm still with UFOs. And I made a whole career out of it, as did Tim.
Yeah.
It's strange.
We actually made a career, and Gene, too. I mean, so few people could actually say that they've made a career. And I have to say, I have made a very successful career as a publisher. We're selling more books than we ever did before. Now, like I mentioned, most of them are sold through Amazon. We still have a few stragglers on our mailing list who are not on the internet, and they will send us in a postal money order, you know, through the mail. But that is few and far between anymore. You don't really get to know your customer, you know, your readers like you used to in the old days because it's all anonymous. I mean, you know, if somebody sent me $3 for a book before, I knew who they were. It was Henry Gallard or James, right. James Whittle, was it, out of Salt Lake City? I mean, Kenneth Larson. I mean, you know who the people were that were kind of supporting you, and now you don't really know who they are, because even if they give you a darn good review, they do it anonymously. You know,
Tim.
Tiger.
Well, wait one second, please. On Amazon, they can use whatever name they want or their real name.
That's what I'm saying.
But they allegedly. Yeah. Have to be verified purchasers to make that review. You can't just review something you haven't bought, and Amazon knows what you bought before you post a review. So
I guess it helps a bit.
I think
they want to do away with the reviews myself, because you can find somebody. I mean, I have a few distractors there who just don't like anything that I put together, not because they've even read the book. Just because they don't happen to like me. So they will give it a, you know, like a one star.
Sure, and but they have to buy the book. They have to be a verified purchaser.
No, that's not true. But
no,
it will say,
Tim is right. That's
say,
not true. You don't have to be a verified purchaser.
No, but it will say, right. If you are a purchaser, it will say verified purchaser next to the review. But there are reviews on there that are not verifiable by anybody. But you can't, if... let's say, for example, that Sean Castile has written 3 pages of something in my book and wants a review. If they won't accept the review because the person is associated with the book, it's all, to me, it's just kind of nonsense. Everything ought to stand on its own. And I'm getting tired of getting emails from them asking me to rate the chewing gum that I just bought or something like that, you know, or the paper or the toilet paper or something. You know, they want a rating and a review on everything, and that's ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
All right, we're going to break in a moment, Jerry. Then you can ask on the other side. Just want to cite one example here about the impact of reviews. So I bought a box of masks, 50 masks from Amazon. Obviously, we're still heavily masking in this state. So the company from which I bought it had this note packaged with a box saying, we'll get you another free box if you review it. They didn't say it had to be positive. You review it, and they will send me a free box. So I got a free box for nothing for reviewing it, and I'll tell you more in a moment. We've got Gene, Tim, Jerry, and Randall. You're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Food and Drug Administration granted an emergency use authorization Saturday to Johnson & Johnson's one-shot COVID vaccine. The federal government expects to be able to distribute 4 million doses next week, though supplies will be limited for a time. The company says it will have 20 million doses produced and delivered by the end of March, with production ramping up to 100 million doses by the end of June. Dr. Naheed Bedelia is the medical director of the Special Pathogens Unit at Boston Medical Center, and she tells MSNBC that Johnson & Johnson getting approval means more shots in more arms.
So I think alone it adds incrementally more doses, right? Partly because one dose of Johnson & Johnson means that you've achieved at least full immunity. You need two doses with the other two, and so 20 million means 20 million more people.
Having a third vaccine available is expected to accelerate vaccination efforts that have already administered more than 66 million shots in the U.S. This is USA Radio News. A search is underway in Nigeria for over 300 schoolgirls kidnapped on Friday. Mike Fortier has more from the USA Radio News Florida Bureau.
The girls taken in the middle of the night by armed men who overtake a state-run secondary school in northwest Nigeria. No word on who's behind the kidnapping, as no one has claimed responsibility, but a Nigerian human rights activist believes the motive is clear.
It's about ransom. It's probably this time around we'll be talking about $20 million to get them out. I mean, what could be more lucrative than that?
Omiyele Sawori tells South African TV the government may be complicit, as officials sometimes get a cut of the ransom money. The Daily Beast reports school and security officials had been warned by locals of impending danger, but it's not clear if anything was done.
And a second former aide to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has come forward with sexual harassment allegations against him. Charlotte Bennett was an executive assistant and health policy advisor and told the New York Times Cuomo harassed her last spring. Cuomo responded in a statement on Saturday, saying he never meant to act in an inappropriate way. This is USA Radio News.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I also made a deal, ladies and gentlemen, you know about this because of my tech site, which is now MacRadio.net, where I made a deal with Vizio. If I reviewed one of their TV sets, no indication of content, I can give one star and say it's a piece of garbage. It wasn't. They would send me a real 55-inch TV mid-price line. And they did, and I did. I wrote the review. I liked the set, so I said so. I didn't say it was the best set in the universe, but my review was not colored by the fact that I got a product. Of course, you see, that's where people can be corrupted, and there may be a feeling on the part of some makers that, look, if we give you the free TV set, you will be, in that way, influenced to give us a better review. But that's that. Let's continue.
Well, you know, along that line, I was reviewing movies for Hustler magazine, and I bring that up because Larry Flint just passed away. And I got fired from the job after 2 years because somebody thought I was taking kickbacks when it came to reviewing the X-rated movies. Well, I never got any kind of kickback from watching any adult movie. The closest thing I got was a free steak dinner from one of the producers. That's all that was ever offered to me. I swear.
So no payola in the porn business.
No.
I used to be a product reviewer for Macworld and for CNET and others. And they did have standards there. About this is reviewing hardware from Apple or from Dell and software from different companies. The consideration here is, number one, I could not own stock in a company, even a share or two to keep track of shareholder interest, although the magazine could do that. I couldn't accept any gift from the company. That would mean taking dinner. I couldn't take dinner from them. I had to be really scrupulous in how I handled myself, because if I didn't, I wouldn't get the reviews and I wouldn't make the money. Now, in retrospect, my biggest mistake was not investing in Apple. If I invested, say, $1,000 in Apple in the early 90s, you cannot believe how much money I'd be worth now. Jerry Clark, please tell us what you think about our discussion.
Well, I just was listening to Tim with some interest because he and I, and you too, Gene, have a shared history and we remember a lot of stuff. And I realized as Tim was rattling off names of various people from the past, I realized I recognized every single one of those names. And I remembered more about them than I thought I did. And he was talking about Alan Vaughn, who I hadn't thought about in a long time. He was talking about his synchronistic experience with Vaughn. And he said that Vaughn had written it up in a book. Was that book's name Patterns of Prophecy?
No. It had the coincidences in the cover, cover. I can't remember the exact title, but you can still buy it for a dollar on eBay or something like that, I think, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, we've all lived a long time, and we have met many, many people. And have many, many memories, and most of them good. Most of the people that, the least I interact with, decent people.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Yeah, few exceptions. But most of them, not bad at all. I mean, even if you didn't, you know, today's a world out there with the political stuff. I mean, you can't even sit down and have a hot dog with somebody if the subject doesn't come up and you end up just about in a fisticuff, you know. But in the UFO field, well, there were certain exceptions. I mean, I can think of a couple of names where you can't mention, somebody else's name because they'll tell you what a big fraud that is, or the case isn't as good as their case. There is some of that in the field, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, but you know what's really great about the field, though, is that if you look at it from a more objective point of view, and Jerry, I'm sure you can appreciate this, having written the UFO Encyclopedia, is that even the characters that might be less savory make it colorful from a historical perspective.
Oh yeah, I in fact love to write about some of the really out there characters. I really enjoy that stuff, and I know obviously Tim does.
I am writing right now an article for Fate Magazine and Phyllis Galdi on the 10 greatest UFO contactees of all time. Greatest being in quote marks, I might say, and it's somewhat in tongue in cheek because that's my style. Phyllis said, "Well, you know, she didn't think today." That the average reader, being a lot younger than we all would be, would even necessarily know about that part of the UFO history. So would I put together an article, which I agreed to do, and I'm almost finished with it. But, yeah, I mean, even that, even the shenanigans of the contactees, it was colorful. And I kind of missed that because I'd rather hear about the shenanigans of the contactees than the abductions of people, you know, aboard spaceships, because that gets kind of monotonous.
So, Tim, would you give us a hint, maybe, about what's going to be in this article? It's, what is it, fatemag.com is the site. And it's really, really good. It's really good to know that Fate Magazine is still around. Tell us, Tim.
The usual. I mean, George Adamski, George Van Tassel, who I put actually a bit of the stock and faith in because of the rejuvenation machine, which is a device, whatever you want, is a dome in the desert, because it is a remarkable feat of engineering. I mean, I just think that the man was onto something, whether it came from the pattern came in his mind from Solganda or whether he was just a genius enough to created himself is beyond me, but I would put him on the top of the list. And then we have one of my favorites, Buck Nelson, who I always considered the Larry King of the Ozark, because like Larry King, he always wore suspenders. And of course, now Buck Nelson claimed that he went to the Mars, the Moon, and Venus, maybe all in one night, which is pretty incredible in itself. And he made friends on Venus with a 600-pound dog by the name of Bo, B-O. When he came back to Earth at his conventions, which were held outdoors in the Ozark, he would sell the hair of the Venusian dog. And he even had a blurred photograph of Bo, which looked remarkably like his dog. And he was of course silenced by the MIB. He was on his way to I think Washington D.C. and the MIB boarded the bus and took him off or threatened him if he didn't go back. You know, he was a colorful character. So,
in those days they didn't do DNA tests. Today we know what that dog really was.
Yes.
Jerry, you were about to chime in there before we proceeded. So go ahead.
Yeah, I have probably an unusual viewpoint of the contactees. I think that Buck Nelson was a con man who, without much of an imagination. But I think a lot of these people, you know, the Adamskys and the Van Tassels and these really kind of charismatic major figures in the 1950s contactee movement, Orfeo Angelucci, I think these guys were sincere about something. It wasn't always easy to figure out what they were sincere about. But I remember when I was doing research on the encyclopedia, I was going through the NICAP files, and I found this letter that Adamski had written late in his life to Donald Kehoe, which just kind of fries the brain cells just thinking of that kind of thing. But Adamski said, and this was not a letter for public consumption. This was a private letter. And it was quite touching. And he said, I know that, you know, we're in different places on this business. But he said, we're both working for the same end. And I want you to know that I'm on your side and I'm supporting what you do. And I'm working on my end from my perspective. And it was a letter of just remarkable sincerity, and there didn't seem to be any reason to write it because he wasn't promoting anything, and he knew that he would get a cold reception from Kehoe, who in fact did not acknowledge the letter.
We have more to come with Jerry. We got more to come with Jerry, Gene, Randall, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Power grid failures and natural disasters. They happen too often now. Will financial collapse be next? What kind of emergency plan do you have for the next sudden food shortage? If you don't, it's time to prepare. At MyPatriotSupply.com, we make it easy for you. Our emergency food storage kits stay fresh for up to 25 years. They ship fast and discreetly to your door. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com.
I am only 40, but I had put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Attention real estate investors. Do you need cash immediately? If you own one or multiple rental properties, you can use your equity to get cash out fast. The best part is we don't need tax returns or even a good credit score. At America's Loan Source, we are not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We make the decisions to loan you money and there's no limit how much we can give you. Some clients have gotten as much as $500,000 or more within days. Use the money any way you want. If you own one rental property or 100, and COVID has left you in a cash crunch, we can help you turn your equity into fast cash. Call now for details and close in as little as 10 days and get the cash you need. 800-507-6553. 800-507-6553. 800-507-6553. That's 800-507-6553.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, when you raised that, Jerry, about this letter from Adamski to NICAP, and as you say, there probably wasn't a response. There's a feeling that some of these contactees had an encounter, an experience of some kind. But it was the kind of experience that maybe wouldn't be taken seriously unless it came out of the mouths of Orthon from Venus or Saturn or something. And that's why, say, Adamski might have glommed on the character Klaatu from Day the Earth Stood Still and met a long-haired version in the desert. That he wrote a book back, what, in the late 40s? About some kind of 49. Encounter.
49. Pioneers of Space.
Yeah, 49. It's a turgid science fiction novel, some of whose elements later show up in his quote-unquote nonfiction.
Well, now, we actually reprinted the book. I paid $900 to buy the book, so the copyright, of course, is public domain, to reprint it. And when I got the book, 16 pages were missing from the book. So we had to find somebody who worked for a library, because there was one in the Washington, D.C. Library of Congress, and they borrowed the book and we copied the 16 missing pages. But we also did a little research on Adamski, and he was into the metaphysical field as far back as 1935. The Los Angeles Times has an article that they printed in 1935 about how Adamski was starting a commune that was being set up around a replica of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And then from that, he started his Royal Order of Tibet, claiming that he had spent his youth in Tibet, which I find very difficult to believe. And then things progressed to where he had that supposed experience in the desert city, which was actually a setup through the Ouija board. Most people do not realize this because...
That's actually, Tim, that's actually in my encyclopedia.
Oh, I missed that. Okay. And then, of course, also, too, the boot prints that Orthon left in the sand when George Hunt Williamson took the Plaster of Paris cast. If you look at the boot prints, it has a swastika in the middle of the boot print. Well, now, I ask you why. Well, isn't it not an interesting fact that George Hunt Williamson used to work for a fellow by the name of, was it Pelly, who was actually...
William Dudley Pelly.
Yeah, who was actually...
A notorious American fascist.
That's correct. So I wonder how the swastika ended up in the middle of the boot print that Orthon...
Well, Some of Williamson's book, and I'm something of a student of Williamson, are actually thinly veiled anti-Semitic works. One of them is UFOs Confidential. There's also a lot of it in Road in the Sky. He never mentions Jews, but if you know anti-Semitic and conspiratorial literature, you'll recognize where this comes from.
Were you talking about the international bankers?
The international bankers who are in league with this, like, it's been a while, but it's this sinister group.
Yeah,
who apparently are the Jews of outer space.
Yeah, yeah.
No, there's a lot of that. If you know what to look for, you'll see it.
It's interesting how ufology has become sort of a nexus for sociopolitical movements. And Nick Redfern, he's done some looking into some of that as well. And he feels that there's a definite connection there where, you know, we have this theme, a very socialist underlying theme where, you know, anti-capitalist, support nature, everybody should be working together as sort of one big happy sort of, if you didn't use the word communist, you could, happy world, you know?
Well, isn't it true also that the FBI investigated contactees because of the fear that they might be associated with the communist movement of that era?
I don't think there's anything particularly surprising about that, because Hoover was investigating just about anybody who opened his eyes or poked his head out of the pond. I mean, if you were any kind of nonconformist, he was really not a good guy who just investigated anybody who might have been completely harmless but had unusual beliefs.
If you read, in fact, I have a report here on George Van Tassel, the documents that the FBI had on file. Most of it is nonsense. I mean, somebody would send an agent out to Giant Rock, who would sit there and take notes about how they didn't believe in proliferation of atomic weapons and how we should live in peace and harmony. And my God, they must have really hated Gabriel Green, because he believed in a cashless society.
So did Star Trek. Do you remember Star Trek? In the Star Trek universe, the Federation, forgetting the Ferengi and everything. Yep. In general, there was no money system. I remember the situation there in Star Trek IV, the Voyage Home, where the crew goes back to the 1980s and a local scientist who's dealing with whales has an Italian dinner with Kirk, and she has to pay for it because in the 23rd century, they didn't have money. But nobody said, oh my God, Star Trek is communist, or maybe they did.
Well, this isn't the 50s anymore. That's why they don't. This was a 50s thing, and a J. Edgar Hoover thing.
Of course, that's also McCarthy and all that. There was a communist under every carpet.
Under every Joshua tree, there was a communist, no doubt, yeah. And certainly a few under Giant Rock. I mean,
it's interesting how you guys mentioned, you know, the cashless society. You started out the program mentioning real money, and I had just had a brief conversation with someone about that, because I'm old enough to remember when they were talking about that and thinking that will be the day, it will never happen. And I swear now I pay for everything with my credit card so I can get the points. I don't think I've paid using actual cash for anything in over a year, at least, probably 2 years.
Even Dunkin' Donuts, you go in and buy a cup of coffee for $2.15, and you swipe your debit card.
I think we're living in science fiction. I often have that feeling.
Yeah, definitely. It's maybe a little dystopian, and I've heard people, especially with this pandemic that's going around, it is a lot like some sort of sci-fi dystopian science fiction holographic universe. It's really quite bizarre. They just landed another rover on Mars. And yet there's people on Earth, you know, going around wearing masks and dying of diseases. It's really quite bizarre.
Yeah, I think the future is just hurtling at us at a growing, accelerating speed. It's really scary, you know. And no matter, it doesn't surprise me that there are so many confused and crazy people who vote for, you know, ridiculous, insane candidates who are going to save them from the future. It's really a strange time. It's only going to get stranger.
Going back to the beginning of the show as well, I'd just like to get a couple of names in of people we've lost in the field during the time that the show has been out, and that includes, of course, James W. Mosley and Brad Steiger. Now, Brad Steiger is one of the people whose books I read them like candy. He's really interesting to read, very engaging author. The premiere episode of the Paracast is really a must-listen for anyone who's new to the show. Go back and check it out. Stanton Friedman, we've lost. Bud Hopkins, we've lost. John Keel, we've lost. Glenn Dennis, we've lost. Richard Hall.
Ted Phillips. Yep. One of my favorites. Gentleman and a scholar and a great researcher.
Now, where do you think the field is going in the future, you guys?
I think that we're probably not very far from general acceptance of UFOs. You know, I think that what we always wanted is starting to happen. And I don't think that we can pretend that you and I and, you know, because we knew better when we were young people. But society in general, scientists, military intelligence, they know more and more, yeah, these things are here. We got to deal with this, whatever it is. And I think that I just... Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm not a young man, so the prospect of no longer being on Earth is inevitable. But I will leave the Earth satisfied that this will be resolved.
We have to break, Jerry, but I'm going to ask you more about your hopefulness after all these years, since the 1950s, we've all followed this subject. From the days of our mid-teens, whether there will be a resolution in our lifetimes, because they don't have a lot of time left. So let's hope they kind of speed this up. Jerry Clark, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, Tim Beckley, the 15th anniversary episode. You're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.